On Wednesday, we wear pink. It's a line from a teen comedy classic. But it's also an example of how our lives are organised around something almost entirely random, the seven-day week. There is no scientific reason to have a week that lasts 7 days. So David Henkin, a history professor at the University of California, Berkeley, set out to try and understand why we totally depend on something artificially created 2,000 years ago. His new book is called The Week, A History of the Unnatural Rhythms That Made Us Who We Are. And Professor David Henkin joins us now. Hello there.
Hi, Jesse. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you as well. What got you interested in spending your week thinking about the week?
Well, I guess I've spent many, many weeks thinking about this. I think I've always been interested in artificial things that come to seem like part of the natural world. Mm. And I grew up in a very sort of week-oriented society. I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family in New York City, where so many of our rituals and activities and timekeeping practices made it clear, abundantly clear at all times where we were in the weekly cycle. So I understood that that was a function of, you know, a set of religious obligations. But I wondered, for the rest of the world, why did everyone else always seem to know and care whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday? Was it just about the cycle of work and rest to which we are all tethered? Was it about vestigial features of religion or cosmology? Or was it something more practical? And so I've always been interested in that question. And I set out to explore how people in 19th century America, which is the period of history that I know most about, how they track time and what made their weeks tick and what tethered them to their seven-day rhythms.
Yeah, and speaking of the rhythm, I guess the pandemic lockdowns brought that seven-day rhythm into sharp relief for us.
It did in some ways, but it's not obvious why it did, because many of us still had the same borders between work and rest that we had before. Some of us even had the same schedule of appointments. So it's not clear why we focused so much on the week when many other aspects of time were equally, if not more, severely disrupted, like time of day. I mean, for many people, the pandemic shutdown blurred the line between day and night, because we were spending both day and night in our home. For some people, it really unsettled the sense of the annual calendar, because things that happened every year suddenly weren't happening, yeah, or weren't happening in the usual fashion. But when people wanted to complain about the temporal disorientation that we all experienced in the wake of the corona outbreak, we always spoke about the week. I assume in New Zealand as well, but certainly I can say with certainty in the United States that people did not talk about being cut loose from the day. They spoke about the week. They said, you know, I don't know what day it is, by which they meant, I don't know what weekday it is. They didn't mean, I don't know what day of the month it is, right?
Yeah, and in fact, you've got a term for that, which I love, and we've just come out of our long summer break here in New Zealand. I think a lot of us experience this as well, Blur's Day, which is where they all blur into one, right?
That term is not original to me. There are many versions of that in U.S. popular culture, but Blur's Day was probably the most common expression of it.
So, you know, we talk about this being artificial or possibly artificial, this concept. And what did we learn from a guy who got lost in a cave in Kentucky about your innate perception of the week?
Well, I think what we learned both from the there's sort of two there was a guy who got lost in Kentucky who I discovered in the mid 19th century, and then there were a pair of scientists who deliberately sequestered themselves in that same place in Kentucky 100 years later. And what we learned from the first case is really not that surprising. Would shut out society, if you could go through a shutdown, it is very easy to lose track of the calendar. I mean, in our shutdown, we at least had ongoing in-person synchronous encounters with people that we knew and even people that we did not know. But if you go into a cave for a long period of time, you're really not going to have many reminders of where you are in the week. And probably the most famous example of this wouldn't be my Kentucky cave tourist, but Defoe's Robinson Crusoe. If you cast away on an island and in a distant land or in an alien society, you will have to depend on timekeeping in order to figure out the weekly calendar. You can look for signs in the skies to figure out time of day and even time of month and time of year. But time, day of week isn't going to work. So Crusoe had to keep marks. And then he eventually discovered retrospectively that he had been wrong. Right, the guy that he called Friday, he actually had met on a Saturday. So yes, you know, if you cut yourself off from record keeping and you cut yourself off from social cues, the week will unravel. The week will disappear because there's nothing in the observable nature to confirm or realign your count.
Unlike you, David, I didn't have any religion in my upbringing, so I'm coming from a bit of a lack of knowledge here. But I sort of assumed the 7 day week might have begun with Genesis and the Old Testament. Is that where it first
Yeah,
sort
well,
of
I mean,
comes
I would
about?
say the 7 day week has two origins to Genesis, and one of them is the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament. But even there, it's not exactly clear from Genesis that you get a week,
Oh, yeah.
right? In other words, Genesis tells the readers that the Lord worked for 6 days and rested on the seventh, but it doesn't say that anyone ought to commemorate that by resting every seventh day.
Right.
You could as easily assume that it shouldn't be commemorated at all, right? Because creation is a one and done situation. Or you could imagine that you commemorate it on the seventh day of every lunar month, or the seventh day of every solar year, or some festival that lasts 7 days. The idea that there should be a continuous cycle of counting 7 days and that then you should rest, that emerges slowly in the Hebrew Bible. It's really not until Exodus, actually, and the giving of the manna in the desert, if you're familiar with that story, that there's any idea that you should count cycles of 7 days. And it's also clear in that story that the children of Israel, the Israelites, are pretty unfamiliar with that because they don't know how to follow that calendar. And the 7 day week is not actually used as a timekeeping system in the Hebrew Bible. It's really only in very, very late books of the Apocrypha that we begin to see people using it as a calendar. So when I say that the week is 2,000 years old, I don't mean that no one ever had ideas before that you might rest every 7 days, but the idea that you're actually counting a cycle of 7 days in order to do that's probably or that may be no longer than 2,000 or maybe 2,100 years old. The separate origin of the week is the Roman planetary week. Rome had a series of weekly cycles of different lengths. The one that was 7 days was based on the planets. The idea was that there are seven celestial bodies that we can see, the sun, the moon, and the five observable planets. And that each one has dominion over a different day, and that there's a continuous cycle of that sort of regime. And that's where we get the names of the days of the week in English, and in fact, in most Indo-European languages. So today for you, Jesse, it's Tuesday, which is the day of Mars. For me, it's still Monday, it's the day of the moon. Tomorrow in New Zealand will be the day of Mercury and or Odin, and that's Wednesday. So all the languages that use either the Norse or the Roman planet names or god names that are attached to those planets, those all bear the stamp of a completely separate tradition of counting a planetary cycle. So in the Roman Empire, these two different calendar systems met. And they merged, and then they were spread through Christian conquest and Christian missionizing to other parts of the world, and then gained further foothold through the spread of Islam.
Japan held out for a while, though. They did fine without
Lots of
any.
places did, right? I mean, that's the point. There were
Japan
places
did
that did
fine.
not
Japan did
have.
fine without any Tuesdays.
They did, and so did most of East Asia. So did the Americas before Europeans and Africans arrived. Basically, societies that had no contact with Christianity, Islam, or Judaism did not count 7 day weeks. And it's really only in the era first of European imperialism and then of global capitalism that we have what we have now, which is the week is a worldwide timekeeping system. Everyone agrees what day of the week it is. We don't all agree, that we increasingly do, when we should rest and when we should not rest. But no one disagrees as to where we are in the cycle.
Huh.
Right? No one says, well, you think we rest today because you think it's Sunday. I think we rest tomorrow because I think tomorrow is Sunday. No one does that. So it's a remarkable agreement. The only kinds of difference we have are the ones that you and I are experiencing right now, Jesse, which is that, I think it's Monday and you think it's Tuesday, but that's simply because we're communicating across a dateline.
I'm speaking with history professor David Henkin from the University of California, Berkeley. His book is called The Week, A History of the Unnatural Rhythms That Made Us Who We Are. So what, if anything, do weeks do for us, David?
Well, I think weeks do many things for us and to us. And the one that they do most powerfully in the modern age is that they attach us to our schedule of activities.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us have activities that regularly recur every 7 days. And we have even more activities that exclusively occur on certain days of the weekly cycle. And that is a form of discipline. It's a form of order. It's also a way of helping us remember appointments. It's helping us make plans with friends, but also make plans with strangers in the future. To use the regular cycles and rhythms of a 7 day schedule to coordinate activities with other people. That's probably the major modern innovation of the week, something that the week didn't do as much for the first, let's say, 1800 years of its use, but does a whole lot of for the last 200 years.
Right.
For
so medieval kings and queens weren't having a Tuesday card game, for example.
Medieval kings and queens probably didn't have a Tuesday card game, but I can say with greater confidence that ordinary people in the Middle Ages didn't have Tuesdays that were regularly different from their Wednesdays.
Yeah.
And there are lots of reasons for it. One reason is if we're imagining medieval as meaning medieval Europe. In medieval Europe, calendars had many, many holidays, feasts, and fasts that were attached to the annual calendar.
Mm-hmm.
So it was often really important to know whether it was January 24th or January 25th. But in more Protestant lands, those holidays tended to diminish. And then in countries like the United States, those kinds of holidays were radically diminished. The United States, from its founding, has had very, very few significant annual dates, which leads to the situation that we have now in many parts of the world. It doesn't really matter whether you know that it's the 24th or the 25th. I mean, maybe if it's your mom's birthday, that's a big mistake to make. But for most people, there aren't the kind of associations that or schedules that make that mistake costly. Whereas mistaking a Monday for a Tuesday typically is costly for most people because they have different lives on those days.
You did a lot of your research in diaries, and interestingly, you looked at slave diaries or slave narratives. Did you learn anything from their stories of slaves, about the importance of certain days?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there are some different lessons to be learned from the experiences of the enslaved. The first thing I learned, which was a little surprising, which is that enslaved people had Sunday off. For the most part, in 19th century America. You might imagine that if you can coerce someone's labor, if there are no constraints on other than your own brute force on whether someone's working for you, that you would make them work all the time. But it was a standard practice for enslaved people to have a day off. That's one thing that I learned. I also learned that enslaved people often had quite different associations with Sunday, which wasn't always a day of rest. It was a day for working for oneself, growing a garden, maybe even engaging in some kind of other entrepreneurial practice. So there was the one day where you could work, but not for the plantation. I learned that there were certain rituals, socializing rituals that attached themselves to particular days of the week. And I learned that many enslaved people, when they remembered stories from their enslavement, did remember what day of the week it happened because of those rituals. There's some other details that I could give, but those are the main things. That even in a rural society where there were no wages and very little control over one's time, the week still mattered. But I would say it mattered far more, or was a more powerful rhythm for people who lived in cities. People who lived in cities, people who earned wages, people who went to school, people who joined voluntary organizations, and people who went to theaters and baseball games and things of that, they had many, many more reasons than rural people, both free and enslaved, many more reasons than rural people to care where we were in the daily cycle, not just whether it was weekday or weekend, but whether it was Wednesday or whether it was Thursday.
Do you ever do a thought experiment where you think, how, if at all, would our lives be different if we followed the Beatles' example and went to 8 days a week? We'd still feel the same on a Monday, the equivalent of a Monday, wouldn't we? And Friday probably too.
It's a very, very hard thought experiment. Maybe harder for me because I've been so sort of weak disciplined, but I think hard for us all. We get some version of that when there's a holiday, where we think, okay, well, there was a holiday on Monday, so today is Tuesday. Is today really like a Monday? Because now I have a 4-day week, or is today really like a Tuesday, but the weekend was longer? I think different people would respond in different ways to the lengthening of the week or to the suspension of the week altogether. There have been some attempts to lengthen the week that have failed. There also have been experiments to stagger the week. In other words, to make the week different for different people, so that we have different days off depending on which segment of the population we're in. I think those have been hard. Those have failed as well. I think we've gotten very, very used to the week, and we imagine that it's sort of built into the world as a real thing. It's built into the order of the universe. And I think the best evidence for that is the following experiment that was pursued in the late 19th and early 20th century by very powerful people, both in Europe and in the United States. Yeah. Maybe the U.S. was really at the vanguard. And that was to reform the calendar. And what these people wanted to do is to create a fixed calendar where the week would fit into the year. So as we all know, right now, the week doesn't fit into anything, right? So if your birthday is January 24th, well, in a 1 year, it'll be a Monday, and then another year, it'll be a Tuesday. And if it's a leap year, then it'll be a Thursday. So they wanted to have a calendar where every January 24th would always be the same day in the cycle. So what they proposed is we'll have a 364-day set of weeks. And then at the end of the year, we'll have one, or during a leap year, two blank days. So they're part of the year, but they're not part of any week, and they're also not part of any month. So this wouldn't have changed the length of the cycle. It wouldn't have it wouldn't have disrupted its coordination. It wouldn't have done anything other than say that one or two days a year have no weekly value. They stand outside the week. And that went nowhere, despite support from, again, powerful organizations, reform movements, business interests. Ultimately, that was an unacceptable tweak. Religious groups opposed it for reasons you could imagine, but even non-religious people found it odd, as maybe you do right now as I describe it, to imagine that you just have a day that isn't really a Tuesday or a Wednesday or anything. It's just
it's like the blank tile in Scrabble.
Right. Well, But the blank tile and Scrabble allows you to imagine that it's some other day. This was a blank tile that you'd have to pretend didn't
It'd
exist.
be fun.
Like imagine a game of Scrabble where you just put a blank tile in there and it does nothing to the word. That was the kind of blank day that they were proposing.
Yeah, and maybe the lesson there is that it'll change when there's a kind of a when it's forced to change, really, when our habits force a change. I wonder if Netflix and streaming services may have lessened the power of the week.
I do think they have. I mean, because one of the sort of foundational activities that emerged in the 19th century that made people care about the week was commercial entertainment and the use of commercial entertainment to get people on weekly schedules, like a matinee on a Wednesday or a Wednesday and a Saturday. And then in the 20th century, radio and then television programs that would air once a week and on the same day of the week. So all these synchronized activities that gave the week a dis the week a day of the week a distinctive feel. Now they're all gone, or almost all gone. So asynchronous entertainment with things like streaming of music, streaming of film, streaming of television, changed all that. There is one huge exception, and that's spectator sports. I don't know how true this is in New Zealand, but in the United States, spectator team sports are still very much attached to the weekly
Yeah,
calendar.
you got Monday Night Football, right?
So football is the best example. Football games take place every 7 days. They take place, professional US football takes place on Sunday, college takes place on Saturday, high school takes place on Friday, special game on every Monday that where only one pair of teams plays. Sometimes there are special games on Thursday. They'll occasionally have a special game on a Saturday and they'll call it Monday Night Football on Saturday, right? Still the idea that this is all and lots of US viewers still have lives that are organized around the rituals of watching football. So that's a big exception. But I do think that asynchronous entertainment is weakening the grip of the week on us, but there's still so many other things that make us care about the week. So I think our habits would have to change a lot. One thing that might change our habits, I would say, is the use of electronic calendars, because part of the utility of the week as a scheduling technology is that you can remember it. Right. So it's if I say to you, Jesse, do you want to go get a lunch next Tuesday? It's easier for you to figure out whether you're free on Tuesday by the fact that you have regular activities that typically meet either always on Tuesday or never on Tuesday. And so that's what makes Tuesday so useful for us. But if we had electronic calendars that were constantly making appointments for us without even our consent, they're just they're just the our calendars are figuring out on their own that we're both free, then sometimes we could meet on a Tuesday or a Thursday, and maybe our French classes or our trips to the country might become more irregular also, because we wouldn't need to use the week as a mnemonic device. And schools have begun doing that as well. Schools in the United States have experimented recently with complicated schedules, so that your Monday isn't always the same as every other Monday. But the thing that enables that to work, is electronic calendaring. I don't think that teachers and students would really be able to stick to a non-conventional cycle of classes that wasn't tethered to the week if they didn't have the tremendous assistance that electronic calendaring provides. So yes, I agree with you, Jesse, that there are some reasons to think that that our attachment to the week might change. But I'm skeptical as to whether it's about to disappear. I think that's unlikely.
David, enjoy the rest of your Monday.
Thank you, and enjoy the great bit of Tuesday that remains to you as well.
Lovely to
And
chat to
I
you.
wish
Yeah, I
all of
really
you a
appreciate
very
it.
safe and healthy day.
The book's called The Week, A History of the Unnatural Rhythms That Made Us Who We Are. And I've been speaking to Professor David Henkin. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Jesse. Have a great day.